Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Figuring out what career path to take is intimidating. There's many paths to choose from, and most of us don't know what a dream job actually looks like. If you've ever asked yourself, what should I do with my life? You've come to the right place. Welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Joseph Lewin, and today I'm talking with your host, Larry Port, and we're going to be digging into some of the common challenges people are facing when making a career transition or getting into the workforce for the first time. So Larry, super excited to dig into this with you.
Absolutely, Joseph.
Larry, we've had a lot of conversations over the last couple of weeks about your passion behind transitioning into the career force. Why is this something that has been particularly important to you?
Well, a lot of different reasons. Number one is that when I was initially trying to figure out what I wanted to do for a living, it was not easy for me. I mean, I basically built my career as a software engineer and an entrepreneur, but I went to school and I studied radio, television, film, and Hispanic studies actually too. So I kind of knew when I was in college that I wasn't on the right track career-wise. I was happy with what I was studying, but I knew that it wasn't going to be me. And it just took a long time for me to kind of like figure out what it was that I really wanted to do. So on the other side is like now, all these years later, I have kids in college myself, and I'm seeing what they're going through. And it's interesting to try and like work with them and get them kind of like on a career heading. And I feel like that's kind of something that's underrepresented in our world, in the world of young people, is like really trying to figure out like what would suit them. So I also feel like this generation needs a little bit of help. I mean, they've had COVID lockdowns, they've dealt with all this social media stuff that we've heaped upon them. Politically, it's an anxious time. Climate-wise, it's an anxious time. So I feel like whatever we can do to kind of make the lives of this generation better is a good thing.
Yeah, you shared in kind of a illustration while we were chatting earlier about how your life when you're growing up, when you're young, basically every single step is laid out for you, and more so for the last couple of generations than throughout the rest of history, right? It's like everything is planned out. And then all of a sudden you're getting ready to graduate and you've got this massive chasm ahead of you and you have no idea what path to take.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's like you go to preschool, you go to elementary school, you go to, and all these things, you got a stone to step to. And all of a sudden you're graduating college and nobody's given you a stone. You got to figure that out. And so that's very daunting. The good news is that we have these choices. I mean, that's, I think, what gets kind of lost in this conversation. There's a lot of places where you don't have the choice as to what you want to go into. But here we do have that luxury. But it's also, you know, being able to navigate what it is that you think you want to do on a day-to-day basis to put bread on the table. You know, you have to also think about like, what do I want my life to be like? Do I want to live in a major city? Do I want to live in a rural location? Do I want to have kids? Do I want to be able to take vacations to Australia for 3 weeks at a time? Like, so you really have to be able to think about what you want your life to be, who you are as a person, and connect those dots. It is that chasm. Yeah, you'll be able to cross it, but it does take a little bit of work to do it right.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting thing that you bring up because you've got the hard skills that you need to do a job. And I feel like a lot of times that's what people focus on, like, oh, you have the aptitude to do XYZ. But does that mean that you're actually going to enjoy doing that? And is the job that, you know, seems like it's a good fit for what your skills are, what you have aptitude for, is that going to translate into the kind of life you want to live? And, you know, we've talked multiple times about how, you know, if you're going to go into the medical field, depending on what path you go down, you can be working some crazy, weird hours. It could be extremely demanding. You could be on call. And if that's something that you enjoy, you know, and some people really enjoy that, right? They like the idea of, you know, kind of being able to jump in and be always on to a degree. But then other people, they might have the aptitude to do whatever the job is, but they want to be able to sit down and have family dinner every night.
Yes. Like for me, it was very important that we had family dinner, that we coached, that I was able to coach my kids' little league team and stuff, and that I was there for the kids' birthdays. Not all of my colleagues were able to do that. So, you know, the other thing I want to point out real quick on this subject is that like, in terms of like what step to go to next, a lot of times people aren't comfortable with that chasm and they just walk anyhow down the path that's predetermined for them. whether it's parental pressure or whether it's just not wanting to have that like scary looming, you know, choice in front of you. Some people just immediately go into law school or medical school, or they go into a profession for those reasons. They just don't want the uncertainty, or it's been dictated to them by someone else. So before people go down that route, though, they need to really think about that, because I've known too many people that just became a lawyer because their parents wanted them to, or they didn't know what else to do, or same in medicine or accounting. And you owe it to yourself to really understand if that suits you or not, and if the lifestyle suits you or not.
Yeah. And then also, you know, I think another element that you've brought up, I think it's good to just clearly state it, is not just thinking through what seems like it will be fun or enjoyable in your 20s, but what kind of life do you want to live over the next 30, 40, 50 years? And it's not like you can't make a transition in your career. You did it. I've done it. You can absolutely make transitions later down the road. But that also depends a little bit on what career path you take. I mean, if you go to school to become a surgeon, you're not going to be practicing until you're, you know, almost in your 30s at that point. And so, you know, really thinking through, well, what do you want your life to look like over the long haul? Do you want to have kids? What does that look like for you? And you brought up, you know, wanting to go into photojournalism and be a photojournalist. And then you're thinking through, well, what does that actually mean for my life, right?
Yes. So, I mean, when I went through my media training, kind of what I was trying to get after was like, I love information. I love sharing information, kind of like education, but I was just so interested in like getting information out into the world. So I was focused on photojournalism. I was focused on documentary production and things like that, museum films. So I had the good fortune to work as a photojournalist for a little bit. And, you know, you think like, I'm young, I get to take pictures and I get to have my stuff published in the newspaper, and very exciting. So what you find out is that when you take pictures for a living, it's a lot different than taking pictures of whatever it is that you want to take pictures of. So you find yourself like either taking pictures of businessmen at like a press conference, or you might find yourself in the middle of a riot, which is like kind of too exciting. So, and then what I realized is that when I would be top of my game, like when I was like in my like, you know, like late 30s, 40s, that when I'd be wanting to have a family, that's when you get deployed to like Iraq or Afghanistan to take war photographs. So that was something that, like, you know, did not jive at all with my life goals, even though I found the work interesting to some extent. So yes, those things definitely like go hand in hand. And the same thing happened. And this is a good tip for people, is like, look around at who you're going to be. You work in a field and all the people that are older than you do not have a life you want, then you're probably in a wrong field. If you go into corporate law and you see all these people working like still like 100-hour weeks and you know, always in the office, and their partners, okay, maybe that's something you want. Maybe that's something you don't want, right? I worked for a documentary film production company, and no one seemed happy. Like, was that something I want? Even though I got to work in a cool, you know, field? No. So to me, it was all about like how I was going to live my life, and then backing like my career choices into that.
Yeah, I want to get practical here, because you talked about how there's these different anxieties that young people are feeling right now, and you mentioned a few of them. And I think a huge one that I'm seeing is just with the rapid change in technology. And, you know, it's really hard from the outside to discern, because, I mean, there's media hype around different things, and then, you know, you have the people who are leading these AI companies making all kinds of crazy claims. And then it's like, okay, what's the reality versus what's something that it's like, well, yeah, this guy's the CEO of this kind of company, of course he's going to hype it up, right?
Well, okay. So right now, obviously, so this is October of 2025, and we're going through this period of AI transition, and people are trying to know what to make of it. So it's all over the map, right? You have, there were conflicting studies, one by Yale, one by Stanford, saying, the Stanford one said, yes, AI is going to affect jobs. The Yale one saying, no, it's really just augmenting what we're currently doing. And we're at this point that if, for those of us that lived through the internet bubble in the late 1990s, early 2000s, where there's a questioning of, is the hype worth it with artificial intelligence? So and this is the one that's really kind of got people's attention, because it's the first technology that could really replace white collar work. And, you know, we're used to technologies coming and replacing blue collar work, such as, you know, factory line people being replaced with robots or efficiencies gained there. But right now, there is a lot of promise, in my opinion, with AI. There's a lot of pushback because it might not be able to live up to this general intelligence hype that people like Sam Altman, the head of OpenAI, are pushing and claiming. So there's been this like massive push by the AI companies to build huge new data centers and so on, because they're chasing this artificial general intelligence, which could really just like think for us, as opposed to the, and the words are kind of confusing, the generative intelligence that we have now, where it's being able to create writing and code and so on and so forth. So, I mean, the proof is in the pudding, in my opinion. Like, if you go into ChatGPT right now, you can have it help you code things. You can have it help you write things. Like, it is there to help you. And it can really, if you use it correctly, it can really increase your work capacity and your throughput. So it is there. It is real. It is going to help us. It will replace some jobs. Does it have the promise that, like Sam Altman says, where it's going to be general intelligence? Maybe, maybe not. There's a lot of skepticism from AI experts that is going to happen based on the underlying technologies right now. But it looks like that this stuff is here, and the way you're using it, just keep using it better and in a smarter way. And that's going to give you the advantages that you need in your career.
Yeah, I think that's well said, because they're talking, I think early on, a lot of people were talking about the technology that we have right now as if it is that, actual intelligence, right? The artificial intelligence, the way you think of it in a movie where it can think on its own and, you know, the robots are going to start coming for us or something and be able to figure it out. And the underlying technology that we've been able to see in the market so far doesn't do that. And it doesn't seem like it actually can do that at this point. Now, you know, maybe that will develop down the road. But at the same time, to your point, like, it absolutely can take a transcript of a video and turn it into an article that's pretty good and like almost there, you know, and that saves hours and hours a week. And so, you know, if you're getting into the workforce and you're looking at this as something where you're going, hey, this is something I shouldn't pay attention to at all, you're going to be in trouble. Because if you're trying to just write articles and, you know, write stuff purely on your own, and you think you're going to do that as your job moving forward, that is a little bit concerning of a path to go down. But if you're learning these tools and you're effectively doing it, then you can really use them and level up a lot faster.
Oh yeah. The best illustration of where it sits right now, I think, is what a friend of mine has done. And he works as a bond trader. And for years, he's like, hey, can you write me a program that would do this or that or that? And I was like, listen, that's a huge commitment. And I have a job and I'm running a company. I can't do that, but that is a great idea. He's now able to do that. He can work with somebody. And so he hired a young person out of school who knows how to use ChatGPT and is interested in it to, based off the requirements that he gave, come up with some Excel macros that does exactly what he needs. And he never would have been able to do that without artificial intelligence as we know it right now. So the fact that you have these capabilities doesn't mean it, number one, it means that there's going to be, that it really can help in certain situations do things that you've never been able to do before, but it's also going to create new software. And new software itself is going to have a ripple effect in the economy and what jobs are, because software is used in all kinds of manner to automate things and help people out. So, you know, I think you're going to have I think you have the tool itself, but you also have a compounding effect of better and more widely available software too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's kind of interesting where the more that I'm seeing people using AI, the people who are the top in their field are using AI really effectively. Then on the flip side, they're not as scared as maybe they felt at first when some of this technology was coming out, because they're seeing the limitations and they're like, okay, this isn't going to replace me right now, or, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be able to replace me. But, you know, they are the ones who are actually really using these tools every day to code things faster, or, you know, maybe to test things faster, to get things up in an environment significantly faster. Okay, so you started a SaaS startup, you ran a startup for a little while, and we're very successful at doing that. And so what's your advice for somebody who's thinking about going into a startup right away versus looking to get a role at a larger company?
So I think both paths are very viable. And I'll tell you why. And they each have their own risks. So there are a lot of people who believe that the best way to jumpstart your career is to start at a big company. And then it's easier to start with like a major corporation And then if you want to do your own thing, do your own thing or work for smaller companies, because it might be easier to go from bigger to smaller than smaller to bigger. I don't know that that's necessarily true. I mean, I can see the argument, but there are some benefits from joining the big company first. You see how other people have done it. You see culture and if the company is really good. I worked for example, Morgan Stanley, and they have an incredible corporate culture. And that's a huge company. I think when I was there, it was like maybe 60 or 70,000 people worldwide. And then I went to a company that was a mid-sized company called Ultimate Software in Weston, Florida. And they prided themselves on their culture and so on and so forth. But because I had worked at Morgan, it was very clear to me that it was like, you know, a small shadow of the culture that they had at Morgan Stanley and so on and so forth. So, and then when I had my own company, I hired a lot of kids right out of school. And so, you know, my company was about a 40-person company, and I had all these kids right out of school. They would work for me for a couple of years, and then a bunch of them got jobs at a larger company, Modernizing Medicine. Some of them got jobs at Google. So the nice thing about working for a startup or a smaller software company or a smaller company in general is that if it's growing, you have these amazing opportunities. Number one, you get to wear all these different hats. If you work for a large corporation, then you might be the assembly line equivalent of, you know, somebody like bending pipes all day long or whatever it is that they do on I had a friend who did that all summer once. So that's why I'm using that example. But you know, you would be doing the knowledge work equivalent of that. You work for an entrepreneurial oriented company, a smaller company, you have to wear all sorts of different hats. So if you like doing a lot of different things, then it's a fantastic thing to be able to do. So, you know, either way, you'll be able to progress your career up, I think. So, and if you look at smaller companies, you might be, if you're ignoring them and you're only looking at Ernst & Young and the Goldman Sachs of the world and whatever large company, you may be overlooking some real gems and some amazing people. And so I would encourage people to look at both ends and see what ecosystem might be better for them.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious your thought on this. I mean, for me, it feels like if you're totally risk averse and you're just going, man, I want to go work a job, have as little risk as possible, jumping into a startup might not be the best idea because there's inherently some risk involved in doing that. But on the flip side, you know, sometimes these bigger companies feel less risky, but sometimes they're actually more willing to just lay people off to meet a quarterly objective or something like that. So how do you feel like the risk profile is of going to a smaller company or a startup versus going to one of the larger companies?
It's a great question, because I remember when I left my job to start my company, people thought I was crazy. I did not think so. I thought that, like, listen, it's very clear to me, having worked in large companies and mid-sized companies, that they want employee loyalty and they say they're loyal to you. The loyalty in a corporate setting only goes one way, and that's from you to the employer. Like, I can't tell you how many people that I know that have worked at a large institution like a Morgan Stanley, like a Microsoft, that just wake up and they get laid off. So there is no guaranteed ticket like there used to be when people would work for the railroad for 40 years and collect a pension. That just does not exist. I do not see working for a smaller company as a larger risk, or even starting your own as a larger risk. If you believe in yourself from an entrepreneurship perspective, that's the ultimate. Like, yes, I think you should do your own thing. That's my belief, if you have the temperament for it. But I do not think that there's necessarily a risk. Although if you, for going at a smaller entrepreneurial company, that said, you kind of need to know a little bit about how they work in order to identify ones that will have staying power. Are they onboarding a lot of customers? Are they funded, or are they, you know, cash flow positive? Are they losing money every month? If you go work for a startup that doesn't have any funding and is losing money every month, then there's a very good chance it won't be around. But if they're making money on a monthly basis, or if they're break even, or if they have some investors behind them, then the chances are you'll have a job for a while.
Yeah. And then, and at a startup, them letting somebody go and then trying to hire somebody back into that role is insanely hard. I mean, you can't be doing that as a startup consistently. You can't just be bringing people on, letting them go and surviving, because some people are wearing, you know, I think this is another element that you brought up and that I've seen also, is at a smaller company, you tend to wear a lot more hats. Your role is not going to be your job description and that's it. And if you go in with that attitude of like, hey, that's not my role, you're not going to last, or you're, even if you last, you're not going to really move up very quickly in a startup if you have that attitude. So it's really being able to wear different hats. But then the advantage of that is you learn different sides of the business, right? And you learn how to talk in, you know, let's just say you're in a marketing role. Well, you're going to be interfacing probably with the person who's head of sales, who might also be the CEO potentially, but you're going to be interfacing with the head of sales. You're going to be interfacing with the head of product. You're going to be interfacing with the CEO. And, you know, if the company's big enough to have a CFO, you're probably going to be talking directly to the CFO, even in like a marketing manager role. And at the very least, you'll have access to those people. So if you want to talk to them, you'll be able to do that. And so you get exposure to a lot of different parts of the business at a startup that you might not get exposure to if you're at a larger company.
Yeah. And your career paths could be kind of like you were alluding to. They can be kind of wild. Like we would hire a lot of people as marketing interns and also as entry-level customer support personnel. And there are at least three or four customer support entry-level people that we hired right out of school that ended up becoming engineers. One of our marketing interns became the head of QA. So she ended up switching over to testing the product and being able to write like automatable scripts and stuff like that. So that's what she found was good for her, because you end up like having to do all these different things. And if you're good at them and if you like them, you end up doing them more and more. So it allows you to really kind of explore a lot of different types of things that you're going to do.
And then you brought up entrepreneurship and how you feel like there's value in that. So, you know, for somebody who's in college right now and they think they might want to be an entrepreneur, they're thinking about it, you know, they feel like they might have the aptitude. What's your advice for them?
So I think the one thing to know about entrepreneurship, and like, I was very lucky to have, you know, my dad who was also an entrepreneur. And he said to me that like, you don't have to be that scared of it, because really, as long as you provide a good product and good service, people consume it. And I think that's true. And you probably think that's true. The only thing I would say is that like, you need to make sure that you have a certain temperament where, because you're going to have like days where you gain a huge customer and you'll have days where you lose your biggest customer. So you're really on a roller coaster. And there can be a lot of emotional fluctuations. So you just kind of have to get into it knowing that for a while until the thing stabilizes and gets off the ground. Reminds me of like when you see one of those tiny little private airplanes like taking off, like it's a little shaky at first, but then it kind of settles into it. That's kind of exactly what it's like. So, you know, getting through those first couple years does take a little bit of fortitude, but there is no better path towards wealth creation and really like just freedom, financial freedom. Freedom to travel, freedom to do whatever you want, time freedom, then entrepreneurship.
Yeah. And you got to put in that work early on, but then you get to decide. There's not somebody else who's telling you when you get to go on vacation or not. There's not somebody deciding, you know, your schedule or your calendar. But then at the end of the day, the buck stops with you. So if you like kind of hiding between the cracks and you don't want to take extreme ownership, then maybe that's not the route. But, you know, if you are a go-getter and you want to have an outsized, you know, really a multiplier on your income or the different things that you could do. Like, I think one of the things that's a draw of entrepreneurship, it's not even that you're going to make a ton of money. It's just that there's the possibility that you can, and having that allure for, you know, that possibility makes it sound pretty exciting and interesting.
Yeah. And then what's the worst that happens? If it goes belly up, then you get a job, you know? So, you know, the one thing I think you got to be careful for is like, you know, not spending too much money and not putting yourself in the hole. But that said, you know, if you can keep a pretty, you know, capitally efficient business and you want your expenses, you know, more often than not, you'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah. And then, like you said, and I've experienced this personally, there was times where I wanted to transition either into a different field or I wanted to transition into a different role. And it was either me going full-time in my own business for a while or, you know, something else that I was working on the side that helped me land the roles that I wanted to land, because I was able to have a portfolio basically, or, you know, work or clients to show, hey, I could actually do this job, right? And then that set me above a lot of other candidates who, you know, maybe understood one piece of it, but since I had seen it all the way through, it was really attractive for people to want to hire me in. And so, you know, especially when you're young, if you have that itch, it's a lot less risky to go that route in your 20s and, you know, even into your early 30s than later down the road.
You have a little baby.
Yeah, exactly. I have a mortgage to pay.
I did start my business when I had a little baby, which was a little bit crazy, but I also do believe that there's never the right time to do anything. There's never the right time to buy a house, have a kid, get married. So you might as well just do it.
Yeah, I'd love to round it out with this, because I mean, really the goal of this episode is to say, hey, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. If you're trying to make this transition, there's a lot going on, right? And really, you've walked through a lot of that yourself through your own career journey. And now that you've been really successful through your career, you've been able to highlight some really important things. But there's another area that you have some unique perspective on from the work you've done in the past. And that's this kind of getting an idea of what industries are going up versus what industries look like they're retracting. So I'd love for you to just spend a couple minutes talking about where you see the market going and what industries make a lot of sense to be going into right now.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, you just kind of pay attention to the news and you see what's going on and it gives you a big clue about like where to be, you know, placing your bets. So right now, for example, I think it's pretty obvious that we have an aging population. If you're not really necessarily aware of that, we're going to be kind of a little top heavy where we're going to be having a lot of older people and fewer younger people because people are not having as many babies and people are living longer. So there's going to be tremendous demands on our healthcare system. And the healthcare system means not just like doctors and nurses. That means like everybody who works in a hospital and they're businesses. So there's people in marketing in hospitals. There's accountants in hospitals. There's all that kind of stuff. There's also all the technicians that are not, you know, necessarily college educated, but a lot of good, very high paying jobs, like a lot of technical positions. So then you have not just like the healthcare providers and the business around the healthcare providing, but then you have all the businesses that supply the healthcare providers. So there are companies that make software that hospitals use to get the bills out, to manage all the meals that people have in the hospital. Like there's a huge ecosystem in healthcare that you can take a look at. So that's one thing. I think there's a huge push towards robotics right now. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity in those fields, not necessarily as the computer scientists themselves, but as the people who are doing more of the soft skills in those organizations, whether it's on the marketing side of things or whether it's just like working with focus groups and understanding how they interact with humanoid robots or whatever. But humanoid or otherwise, robots are going to be more and more prevalent everywhere. Another thing to maybe think about in terms of like trends and stuff that's going on is just any kind of field where there's a lot of human-to-human interaction. So like sales positions are good ones to consider. You know, any, you know, psychology positions are good ones to consider. Anything where your core humanity is a critical thing is something that you might want to take a look at. So, you know, there's all these like kind of fields that are happening. Another major one is like an AI thing, not necessarily the AI companies themselves, but on the suppliers for the AI companies. So, you know, the data centers that are being constructed, the DevOps required to hook all of the machines together, the energy requirements for AI are huge. And also, you know, if we continue to electrify vehicle production, we're going to need a lot more electricity. So look for jobs in like geothermal, nuclear, different kind of energy sources. So energy is going to become huge. Well, it already is, but it's to power this next hurdle we have to get over, it's going to be a major, major deal. So, you know, you kind of look around the news and you look at the trends and you see everything that's going on. Now would not be a good time to get a government job. They're slashing government funding, not just in the United States, but a lot of countries. You know, not a good time to get a job in public radio, unfortunately. Maybe, you know, so you can see where, you know, not a good time to get a job doing something that's repeatable on a white collar level. So if you're going through documents and pulling out who the trustee and the beneficiaries are from a legal document, that's going to be very automated. So any kind of rote white collar work, I would stay away from.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think even a lot of research and analyst jobs are going to change significantly. So at least be paying attention, even if they, in some degree, like they are now, you're not going to be doing exactly the same things with,
right?
Because that's where AI really excels, is in some of that side of things, data, analyzing data and doing things like that. Awesome. Well, Larry, this is a really insightful episode. I know that I wish I had this when I was getting ready to graduate and make some of the career pivots I had. It would have been really helpful to be thinking through some of these things. So really, really appreciate your insight.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for tuning in to Dream Job Cafe. Definitely tune in to future episodes. And don't forget to like and subscribe. It really helps us move the show forward and get the word out about the jobs that are actually going to exist in the future and the ones that make sense to go into. So thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.